Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. In the meantime, I'll start with the association of our issues and just get ready for us to start the meeting. I would like to welcome everyone who is present in this meeting, and I've realized that the Deputy Minister in the National Treasury is part of us, and we appreciate his presence since this matter that we deal with actually requires the department to fill us in, you know, it's a matter that we've been arranging for quite long. I'll quickly take you through the agenda and highlight what are the apologies that are before me, and thereafter we can be able to proceed. We've got the first item as a briefing by the National Treasury on its progress report or the view of the entire procurement system of government. I'll just come back to explain the item. I'm just going through that in the moment. The second aspect of our agenda is the briefing by the National Treasury on its role on the Integrated Financial Management System, that is the IFMS, in the public service. Okay, just to give a brief background is that these matters that are before the committee today are long-term issues that have been in the committee for a long time. And as a matter of fact, on our role of oversight, Deputy Minister, we haven't been finding conclusive reasoning in terms of saying that we are comfortable as a committee. We think things are happening very well. That's why we have been calling and recalling both the Department of Public Service and Administration with SEHA together with National Treasury over a long period of time. And at this time around, we gave a bit of time so that there also can be synergy working together, and we can be given, you know, a feedback that satisfied us as the committee that surely within government there is progress, things are happening. We are actually looking forward, you know, to really look into the issues of procurement in particular. As we know, there are major issues. There was a time when the meeting was supposed to see, but now we have Minister Kerry's aspect of it in the budget speech, and we had to defer meeting to a later stage. And now we have an opportunity to really deal with the matter. We appreciate it. And then also on the integrated financial management system, we have been attending, you know, largely we talk of collaboration like a buzzword. There's no meeting we move out. We haven't talked of collaboration of institutions, working together of government, integrated, you know, we're coming together for planning, emphasizing the issues of clusters, also ourselves calling for, you know, tight clustering in parliament on our oversight. And therefore, part of it, we haven't been seeing a good synergy between DPSA with the State Information Technology Agency together with the National Treasury. And part of what we'll be looking at, we'd like to see a bit of that. It will give us a sigh of comfort that we're actually getting some. Just briefly indicating that it's one meeting that we are really looking forward. We believe we're going to have a fruitful day today. Members, especially Honorable Williams, with a hand there, you know, I'm sure he'll be listening to every aspect of whatever will be said, you know. Part of the issues are the issues that worry him a lot, you know. He even tells me, even after meeting, talks about those issues. I know it's not only him, but he's been very vocal on some issues that are really paining him. And possibly today we're definitely going to move out of this meeting, having found some bit of seeing the way forward, because we believe that a lot of work has been done on that area. And thanks for your presence, Deputy Minister. At this point in time, honourable members, I believe that we're proceeding quite well with the meeting because very few apologies came before me. The Deputy Minister for Public Service and Administration, Honourable Ian Rollo, that's the only apology I have, and I can see that all members mostly are here. And also the house is full from the DPSA is here, National Treasury is here. I wanted to do an introduction, but I realized that I haven't been brought all the people present, and I will therefore leave it to the delegation to reintroduce all, or try to just indicate who's from the National Treasury. I didn't get a delegation from DPSA. I've just seen the chairperson, I've seen Kenny as well from DPSA. They will actually do their own introduction. From the National Treasury, we do have Kenneth Brown. They'll also do reintroduce themselves once they start to speak. Deputy Minister. We've got Mike Hill, Sass. Is that his name? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we've got Lindy Broderick. We've got Kutso Mashabela. Kutso is from the Norms and Standards, FCM. And then again, we've got Mantapeng Parker. Okay. So it's indicated that we're dealing with contract management. Okay, and then we've got Mutushi Muifu. Okay, and Mutushi also is SCM, Norms and Standards. And then, yes, there's also, who will always be here, Tembegile Plati. Okay, they are led by the Deputy Minister in Ndlandla, who is with us here, and we appreciate the presence. Again, Minister, I will emphasize that, you know, to lead these processes. Okay, Public Safety and Administration, you would like to do an introduction? Ken?
Joining DPSS is myself, Kenny Governor, the DDG responsible for the HR module of the IFMS and supporting the team together with CETA and National Treasury around the IFMS project. I have with me Chief Director Conal Ace, who is the project manager on the HR module. And then we have officials from both the ministry as well as from the department present. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Can I then, honourable members, you know, because National Treasury is not always with us, it's unlike Department of Public Safety and Administration, which always here. Maybe I'll just go through members starting from the back there, just to also see if I still remember them all after the budget vote. The first one there at the back. Oh, would you like to introduce yourself, members? Okay, I proceed, honourable.
Morning. My name is Dumisani Glimbi, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Adrian Williams, a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Alita Bushego, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Johanna Mulemalege, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Christina Mohale, member of the committee. And all of these are my people from the ANC. Thank you.
Good morning, Akubas Marais, member of the committee.
Dietler Stoy, member of the committee, and all these people are from the DA.
Thank you, honourable members. Can I then hand over to National Treasury, Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It is indeed an honour for us to appear before the Committee on Public Service Administration. Mine is only to be here to give support to the team. You know, this small claims court is very important for me. As you would know, Chairperson, that you know, both the matters before the committee are very important to the life of the function of government. Procurement constitutes an important component of government, but it is an area also that you know, that has challenges that actually require the coordinated effort of all of us. The integrated financial management system has been long coming. We all know it's had its problems, and we think we are now at a point where we will be able to take the process forward. But Chair, the request I wanted to make, first, an apology from the Minister who could not make it. He would have also loved to be here, because if we can address these issues together, then we will be able to make headway in government. The request I wanted to make, Chairperson, was whether it would not, because of the interrelationship between the two, whether it is not possible to do both presentations before we engage on them. Because, you know, every time I talk of procurement, I tend to veer to the systems, and the systems are located within our integrated financial management system.
I think you remember the time. We can proceed that way.
Okay. We are going to ask Mr. Brown to do the presentation. And then when the question time comes, he will do. Mr. Brown, if I were to say, is part of our overhaul process. He is a process itself. Yes, he's been with Treasury for some time, and we realized that he's reached his sell-by date, so we deployed him to head the office of the Chief Procurement Officer. So he is the Chief Procurement Officer. Chief Procurement Officer. The new office is in the process of establishing that office. He is going to tell us at where he is now with the establishment of the office. Because even though we're not saying that this office is going to resolve all the problems, but it is part of our overhaul of the entire procurement system. So that's why I was saying he himself is part of the process. But yeah, let me make one point, which I think is critical. If we are to deal with the challenges that confront us, both in the procurement system and in the entire government financial management system, the one thing that I wanted to believe, if we were to be able to procure, we will have resolved our problems, and that is integrity. Because behind every system, there is the human element. If we cannot build that part of capacity, we are unlikely to win the war. But from government side, we can put systems in place. From parliament side, there will be oversight, which we fully appreciate, and that is the reason why we're here, because we also want to understand what parliament actually expects of us, besides telling parliament what it is that we are doing from our side. But I think it would be important also to hear what parliament expects of us. And the coordination that we are beginning to forge with ourselves, with nice here, the president of the chairperson of the new chairperson of CITA, whom we've had informal engagements, because we're trying to see how best we can address this thing in a more effective fashion. But yeah, that was the only point I wanted to make, that at the end of the day, when all systems have been put in place, we actually need to go all out and look for this important commodity called integrity. Thank you very much, Chair. Kenneth, go ahead.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, Members. They call me Chief Procurement Officer. I brought Matabe here with me. We call him actually Mamfundi, because he said, Kenneth, you need a prayer. If you are about to take off, you need the Holy Spirit to really support you. So I also brought us that part, actually. Honourable members and chair, I mean, the presentation in brief will look at the current landscape a bit, talk about the implications of the current status of supply chain management, and how strategic supply chain basically is, and what projects are currently underway to start to transform there, and then I'll just give quite to the committee a feel of how long some of the stuff is going to take us at the end of the day. As the minister said, at some point you can't wake up tomorrow and then you want to issue a tender. So in the same way, it will take us a bit of time to really reorganize the place and make sure that the system becomes functional in the manner in which we hope it would be functional there. So firstly, in the current environment, supply chain has been managed basically based on there's a budget and we need to basically spend it at the end of the day. So all of the elements that make up supply chain, there's the four main elements and nine, if you take a sub-element together, somewhere they get lost actually in it. So departments go out, we've got the budget, we just need to spend. I don't think there's an understanding of how strategic actually supply chain management itself could be, basically. So the focus is mainly on getting the tender awarded, and not four steps prior to that and the five steps after that, which I'll talk to a bit later. But the current problem for supply chain management actually, for procurement to flourish actually, what you need is a stable organizational environment at the end of the day. So you need a bit of stability, whether it's at the SUD level, at the senior management level, you need that kind of stability at the end of the day. In the absence of that stability, you're going to have problems. And if I can cite a few examples, you'll see it. For example, in the Eastern Cape, where you've got the Department of Education, you have the high turnover of, at the HR level, for example. It creates quite a bit of a problem in terms of if you want to embed solid supply chain management principles, actually. But the high turnover staff, even at SAM level in departments, is a cause for concern for us in terms of the initial scope of work that we've done. What is missing, actually, in government is really the recognition that supply chain management itself is an essential function. If you think about everything in a department has got to do with supply chain management. Let's take personnel. The fact that you place an advert in the newspaper, you're actually issuing a tender, and you're requesting specific skills because you put the specifications actually in place. So even in the hiring of personnel, it's a procurement process actually in itself. So that part is actually really underestimated. And part of what the Office of Chief Procurement Office wants to achieve is to start to elevate the supply chain as an important essential function for government. So if you go to the next slide, you need to know the demand for the article that you're about to procure. You need to then plan your procurement. You need to have the proper budget for what you're going to procure. You need to understand the market out there, right? Know the suppliers who are there, what they supply, at what quantities, and at what prices they basically supply there. And also you must have the ability to monitor performance at the end of the day of your suppliers. And the most important part has got to do when the goods are being delivered, whether they are properly used, properly managed over a period of time. Now if you look at the 3 or 7 points that's made there, right, the focus just remains on the tender that must be awarded, and once it's awarded, everybody falls their arms and nothing really happens. So how do we embed the entire process in such a way that it moves just beyond the issuing of the tender, basically? So we are starting to look at it. Now for an institution to function properly as it relates to SAM, it needs proper human resources, well-skilled, properly equipped to be able to do that. Procedures need to be in place, and some of the procedures actually need to be standardized based on the particular items that would be procured. Data and information management systems are important. I think Mike later on will talk about in detail about information management systems, but they are critical. And later on I'll also briefly go to that. Then also a system to monitor utilization of items, stock management, whether it's in pharmacies, in hospitals, whether it's school when it's already built and handed over. How do you manage, monitor its utilization becomes quite important. And then the audit function that needs to basically be in place. And when we analyze the auditor general findings, they actually highlight the 5 as the key gaps within the system. So we're starting to look at that and say, how do we start to build the capability around those 5 items? The next slide, we all know this. Because of the failures of the system, slow delivery, high levels of underspending, and where delivery takes place, the quality of it is not up to the requisite standards. So you've got wasteful expenditures, you've got shortages, and you've got corrupt activities going on. Now, what we will be doing over the next 5 to 7 years, we started already, 5-7 years look a long way ahead of us, but we need to start somewhere. Basically, we need to understand the entire architecture of supply chain. To buy the bottle of water, to build the school, to buy IT equipment, to purchase SKA, all of that requires different processes at the end of the day. How do we design the architecture to really take into account the different goods and services that we will be procuring? We already, we need to create the capability within Treasury to be able to manage the entire supply chain management system. The process of that is underway. We have identified about 6 functional areas that we need to basically strengthen. The first one has got to do with your norms and standards, policies, regulations, and that. So we've got a work stream that would look at current legislation, the guidelines that we send out. So we will initiate an evaluation process of all of that that's basically in place and how we streamline it. And also evaluate it to check whether it doesn't hamper, delivery. So we've got that stream. Then we've got the second important stream, which is actually very important, which is capacity build. Senses just issuing the guidelines and hope that things will happen actually on the other side. So when we look at capacity building, we're thinking more broadly than just teaching people how to do supply chain. We want to professionalize actually supply chain management, if you think about that. So we're thinking of an accreditation system for supply chain management professionals at the end of the day. So that's going to be key in building, in making sure that the human element is fully to be able to exercise its responsibilities. The third key element has got to do with client support and operations. If you take the Eastern Cape Health Department, it has got over 700 cost centers where supply chain actually take place. So that's how complex the system can be. If you were to aggregate it across country's health system, you will have close to over 9 times, maybe 700 cost centers to be able to do it. So when we talk client support and operational support, we're thinking of where somebody can pick up the phone if they don't understand something and call another person who answers the phone and be able to give the correct advice on a real-time basis to whoever needs support. And that, which is completely different from capacity building. Here you assume the person has already got the capacity to do it, but where there's uncertainty in certain areas, how that person would be supported on a real-time basis. So you've got class support and all that. Then the other issue that to do with monitoring and making sure that people basically comply at the end of the day. So there's a system that we are thinking about on how we're going to deal with that. The other stream has got to do with automation. How do we take the human element out of the system? Instead of asking, say, suppliers to have tax clearance certificates, we make it a requirement. But the person who processes the tender must be able to just get into the system, type in the supply information, and the tech system. Or we actually need to go as far as if you just type in the company's detail, exceptions must be able to pop up somewhere. This person is an employee of the state. This person so that the thing becomes really automated and less labor intensive. So when we talk about automation over the next 3 to 5 years, that's where we want to basically go. The other area what we're thinking about has got to do with strategic sourcing at the end of the day. And it links basically to the point that I've made. Certain goods and services and infrastructure require different responses in terms of how you procure basically for them. We had a debate last night and Matabe was saying, if you know there are only 2 suppliers in the country, why do you still issue a tender? You can't just call them and negotiate the price with that at the end of the day. Think differently on how you're going to procure some of the stuff. So we've got strategic sourcing, what kind of different modalities we can use in our procurement. But also, building the research capability to be able to interact with sector departments. Textbooks, for example, may be obsolete in the next 3 to 5 years at the end of the day. So we may actually move into e-learning. So we need to already start to think now, how do we get the building blocks going to get to e-learning? We possibly are about to purchase over 400,000 laptops over the next 2 years, 2 to 3 years. Why don't we use a reverse auction and do it publicly? So those are the different kind of things at strategic sourcing level that we start to need to think about on how we can do. So how the treasury, we are now in building the office, we are really thinking more broadly around basically that. But also we're looking at standardization at the end of the day. A process in a health department in Mpumalanga should not be different from a process in a health department in another province or in municipalities. How do we standardize basically some of the processes becomes important. But also how do we standardize prices for the same goods? Why do you pay 5 rand for this bottled water in Mpumalanga and pay 10 rand at Parliament maybe for that? So let's check what Parliament is doing actually as it relates to that. So price indexing becomes key at the end of the day. You've got 700 health facilities in the Eastern Cape with 700 hot centers. shouldn't we aggregate some of the functions and have common hubs on how we deal with that? So we're exploring those kinds of options already. The process is already underway of doing that. But we need to make sure that people comply. And if people don't comply, we need to take actually action against people who basically don't comply, as it relates to that. So, on the next slide, I've touched on some of the issues already, pricing, vaccine, standardization, aggregate of demand. I mean, government doesn't use it by buying power at the end of the day. Right? I don't know how many computers we use actually, basically, in government. You know? How do you put a procurement system in place to ensure that you don't pay 30,000 rand a laptop, but you pay 5,000 for it? Because you are a big purchaser, basically, at the end of the day. So how do we get the thinking in that kind of direction and using our muscle to be able to get the prices actually down and really get the stuff right quality at the lowest cost going, if you think about it. And how do we really improve effectiveness? We're starting with a few pilot sites. I'll touch on this a bit later on. But what is it that we can learn there to really transport into the entire, basically, country to be able to do that? Create sector-specific standard procedures. What you procure, how you procure pharmaceuticals will be different from how you procure for ICT infrastructure. It will be different from how you build schools at the end of the day. How do you make sure that you understand the different modalities to support all of it? Then let's standardize the SCM HR framework as well. We've done a desktop study, and I think you find that in a department you've got hundreds of job descriptions of nearly the same function at the end of the day. Shouldn't you have one, two job descriptions that covers basically the same area of functionality within there? So how do we reduce the administrative burden to be able to, you know, employ people and manage people actually better becomes key. How do we create a data warehouse, and the data can be used basically to inform future decisions at the end of the day becomes important. So we're looking at basically all of that. So 4.2, the next slide. I mean, I've touched on that. We are now busy establishing ourselves. There, you can go into the next slide. Basically, on page 10 now, 5.1, we're looking at supporting 5 provincial departments in Limpopo. As I'm talking to you now, we are assisting the Department of Human Settlements there for the procurement of low-income housing. The kind of support that we will provide there. With the provincial treasuries there, we are restructuring the provincial treasury to have a dedicated supply chain management function to oversee it, basically within the province and on some of the delegated municipalities there. So the Department of Public Service and Administration, actually we've been working closely with them. We have already reviewed the structures of provincial treasuries, and we have now a dedicated supply chain management unit that we will be establishing within the treasury. So we are at the final stages of actually concretizing basically the proposal at the end of the day. So those are the powers and entities that are given to a provincial treasury by the FMA there. Then we're looking at improving effectiveness in the provincial health department. In the health department, if you look at boilers, for example, it's a simple thing. There are only two suppliers of boilers at the end of the day. So how do we assist the department to be able to procure for those boilers at the end of the day? We're also looking at logistics, you know, the issue around pharmaceuticals and pharmacies, how that actually needs to be streamlined. You've got a Dis-Chem center that is the wide network at the end of the day of managing pharmacies at the end of the day. What can we learn there and transport into government in a particular way becomes important. So we are piloting in some of the places. We are already working hard in those areas, and once we've got that, we will start to transport quite a lot of those lessons parallel to the government-wide. I've spoken about price indexing. That process is already underway there. I've spoken about the National Treasury Office
of the Chief Procurement Office, what is necessary. But I think what is important even there is how do we empower accounting officers to understand that supply chain management, if you neglect it, you neglect it as your own health at the end of the day. It becomes quite key for us. So we will be looking at that and building the capability of practitioners and line managers to be able to do that. In year two, I'm giving it to you year two, three, four, five, etc. But processes already, for all of them, actually are already underway there. We've already done detailed capability or capacity building framework. At the end of the day, we know exactly what to do where and at what speed there. So we're ready actually to move. We are now also where I sit in my office, starting to recruit people to be able to start to drive a lot of that there. We're already doing work in municipalities, building the capability of smaller municipalities to be able to manage the supply chain there in a more efficient way. But in the office itself, we're building the capability to be able to support municipalities at a national level, especially 17 big municipalities, but also to delegate a lot of that responsibility to provincial treasuries. Provincial treasuries have MFMA units, and we will be strengthening those MFMA units to oversee and support supply chain management in the municipalities. So I've spoken to a lot of duplication, basically, in that. And we'll also look at some of the SOCs on how we support them, rolling out some of procurement activities there. And the most important one, which we're doing the groundwork, I mean, if you think about where SARS is today and the fact that you can just e-file, just like that, it's a revolution on its own. So when we talk about automation, that's our thinking. How do we automate so that people in one point do certain things to be able to manage contracts and manage basically the rest. The capability to manage big, large infrastructure. I mean, we're already doing work in provincial territories and in provinces, by the way, to our integrated infrastructure management system there to be able to build schools, clinics, because it's not only about building it, it's about maintaining them at the end of the day. How do you actually get to the whole chain? So we're already doing work with that there. And the last slide, basically, I've covered a lot of that. So once we've broken it up in those years, a lot of the work is already starting to take place as around that. Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, and Matabeng here at that.
Okay, I know that you want to just go through a booth, but I'm sure it's very interesting. There are some issues that already come, but because we made that commitment, we'll just stick to it painfully, so you can trust it, Deputy Minister.
I was actually trying to check that, whether the agreement still stands. If it does, then I request that he proceeds. But if the feeling of the committee is that perhaps the issues that he has raised require that they be dealt with separately. I mean, we're flexible. But I was just saying, because there is a tendency of actually dealing with the two, you know, the temptation to get them to the other once you're on the other is quite great.
So, can I find the numbers? Does it still stand? What's your opinion? How do you feel? I think let's break it down a bit. You feel that same?
Yes, absolutely.
I think let's proceed that way. If members want to really zoom into others, they might be cleared quickly and then we move to the next. I'm sure there's quite a lot that is coming up. Yes, it might impact on the other, possibly if you don't want to respond to others, be fair to the presentation, that will be fine because it will then be here once you do the presentation. Okay, for members who want to really take up questions or areas of clarity, Honorable Williams. They will be followed by Honorable Dreyer and Honorable Murray in that order. Is there any other hand that I omitted? Okay. My apologies, Honourable Du Toit.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got quite a few questions, and perhaps in the next presentation that they will be answered. But I just want to know, is there a mechanism for larger tenders where there will be skills transfer. I'm not talking about skills transfer with regard to procurement management skills. I'm talking about if you're going to build, I don't know, big infrastructure. Is there a mechanism in place, or are you going to have a mechanism in place where there will be skills transfer, for instance, project management, contract management, things like this? Because fundamentally what happens is government buys stuff from somebody who's got skills and they end up with a product, but then there's no skills transfer in it. And in order to build our developmental state, we're going to have the skills transfer. Secondly, you talked about the automated system for procurement management. And I'm just wondering, last week in my budget vote speech, I talked about the Auditor General reported that 81% of departments don't have secure financial systems and 83% of entities don't have reliable backups. So are you going to sort that out first before you have a massive IT thing? Because unless that's sorted out, it doesn't matter what system you put in place. If they're unsecured financial systems would lead to massive corruption and probably is a serious cause of the corruption. Just one more thing. I just want to know, you know, the procurement in the Department of Labor of the Siemens system that they had, and it all went pear-shaped fundamentally, and there was many problems there. Have you got some way of managing that? I'm trying to establish whether Treasury is going to basically take over the procurement system of large tenders. Is that the plan here? And if so, have you got some mechanism to prevent a Siemens situation happening in future in other departments? Thank you.
Yeah, Honourable Detroit. Okay, we'll come next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know, I think you must have contemplated it, the saving on personnel and human resources bill, I mean not bill like, you know, like legislation, the check that you have to pay, through this technology and automation, and then the saving as a percentage of the current procurement in real terms at the present value of money. They're looking at that. Otherwise, what's the point if we're not going to have a saving as a percentage of future procurement? We're looking at a reduction in buying, you're saving in that, okay? And that brings me to the other one. Next one is we have a save, for instance, if we do save on personnel and we do save on future procurement in real terms, even with the growth and everything, but in real terms, then we're looking at the cost of implementing this system over 5 years, and what is the payback period until we get that internal rate of return on our investment back? Okay, so we spend it for 5 years, okay, we're implementing, we got to recover these costs, and then sometime in the future we're going to start saving a certain percentage. So that is the normal cycle of any investment in the business. So I just want to look at that. How is your vision around that? Because I'm sure you guys must have worked that out, being in Treasury. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to start with maybe the easiest question, and that's that 0.5, all the milestones. I'm not quite sure when is year one. Is it this year, next year, is it last year? So that we can just establish when is year 4 or 5. Now, on that one, you know, you mentioned rollouts, a model, a capability model, a plan. I mean, you know, to what extent will this rollout be transferred into action plans and implementation? Because, I mean, one thing that we know that we have got ample good examples of, and that is of policies and models. But the problem is the implementation, the execution. Now, mentioning that to my, you know, if I can go earlier or you know, in your presentation, I've made here a note and said, I'm actually shocked to hear that it seems like there are not proper financial control systems in place. I've always said that I think National Treasury is probably the best organized department in government. Now, is this problem at National Treasury, or the challenges at National Treasury, or, you know, in terms of identifying and implementing and rolling this out, or is it really in the provinces? Because if it is in the provinces, then yes, like I mean, you know, to don't understand the supply chain management system and how it works, it's actually, I mean, that's the basics of any business and any business unit. You know, whether that's a province, whether that's a department, whether that's one of these units that you were referring to in the Eastern Cape, I mean, those are the basic things. You know, if you don't do the basic building blocks correct, you've got no hope in hell to achieve the pinnacle objectives of any model or a rollout. You know, I mean, so you have to take a step back. I mean, I've picked up when you say that there's a high turnover of HODs. Why is there a high turnover of HODs? Is it because of the appointment system that is not properly? Is it the fact that HODs are appointed in positions where they're not capable of doing the job? How on earth can we recruit people in such high positions, not knowing about the basics of doing business, even in a government department? If you've mentioned in point two a couple of implications of the current system. And again, that brings me back to human capability and ability of people. And I think what we have seen in the National Development Plan is also, you know, that those abilities and capabilities and skills we don't have, that actually sheds a shadow on the capability of the state to really go forward. How do we curb that? You've mentioned about corruption. You've only mentioned about, you know, the whole where you're awarding tenders. The problem is not, and there also you may have to take a step back and say, it's not after awarding the tender, it's the process of awarding the tender. Because if you award a tender to the wrong person or the wrong institution, then you know, you've got no hope in hell. That you will, even if you've got a good control system, that you will have results. So, you know, somewhere I think we're missing the point, or we are not prepared to pinpoint the real problem. Because we can do a lot of things, but if you don't take this proverbial step back and do the basics correct, bring in the building blocks, then you've got no hope of correcting that. You can't just treat the symptoms. You know, you have to treat the cause of the problem. And I get the impression we are still busy treating the symptoms. And I mean, what? You know, and I mean, we can have fantastic plans of rollouts. In other words, treating the symptoms, models and things like that. But what is the action plans and the strategy, time frames of treating the cause of the problem? I mean, we have heard, also in the National Development Plan, one of the roots of corruptions is government employees or their family members doing business with the state. You've mentioned, you know, that we don't have a system where it red flag. How do we approach that?
Sir, Honourable, could I just request that maybe we just zoom into specifically doing the questions?
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, so we don't open it up like it's a political input.
No, it's not political input.
Yeah, so that we can take other issues. I'm sorry, not political input, but a speech. So that we are able to take up also other matters. We still remember they said they have a related presentation. Could you just summarize whatever we're saying so that we're able to give them space to get into the... You can sit for seat.
The question is too sensitive, Madam Chair.
Fine to have a sensitive question because they're here to answer that sensitive question. We appreciate it from the side of the committee. You should proceed to do that. It's just that you need to time yourself as well once you make a question.
Okay. And the last that I just want to mention, you mentioned that we've got CETA here. How do we correct that? We have got CETA. That we don't have a situation where CETA is the procure office of in information and technology. We have got a CETA. Why do we still have got problems? with different ministries or different departments doing their own procurement and then have it all wrong, or there's corruption in the process. So we have got a lot of things, but we don't have the building blocks to bring that together. How do we do that? How do we take that step back and do the great things first?
Thanks, Honourable Member. Maybe what, let me allow National Treasury to just clear rules and then we'll see how do we move forward.
Thanks, Chairperson. A number of questions actually do exactly what I had said we should try and avoid. But they are setting the scene for us to get on to the next presentation. Chairperson,
even that one, Deputy Minister, it's fine if you say you'll respond to something when it comes to your presentation.
Yes.
That will be allowed, because we'll understand as a committee, that's what you raised.
Okay, I'll leave the difficult ones to Mr. Brown, but let me give a general response. One of the questions that come out, which came up from Mr. Tutoi, with regards to the savings in relation to the wage bill with the introduction of procurement system, but also the cost of implementation and return on investment of the implementation of the process. Firstly, the issue of the wage bill is a major concern for government, I must say, but as a percentage of our total expenditure. But the biggest thing with the wage bill, I've always said this, that it is not the ever-increasing wage bill, but it is if the wage bill increases, but we do not have commensurate increase in productivity, then you have a problem. But if the skills that we are talking about, there was a question in relation to why is it that there is a high staff turnover and all sorts of things, particularly in management. If you are attracting the right skills and you pay the right salaries for the right skills, that wouldn't be a problem. But productivity is not increasing precisely because of the problems and the challenges that we are raising in relation to issues of procurement, issues of systems that are not efficient enough to be able to ensure that we get value for our expenditure. So that's the whole process. So the numbers, yes, and implementation is being costed as we move on. But it is, we cost as we move on, because if you can't put an ultimate cost to the total or the totality of the implementation of the process. But Mr. Brown will be able perhaps to do that. But what I'm saying is that the biggest return on this investment is going to be if we are able to curb corruption that arises out of a system that is not able to detect some of the things. Two, if we are able to get economies of scale out of bringing together and getting systems to talk to each other. Ms. Maria talks about where the lack of financial control, which I think IFMS is going to be addressing, where the lack of control is. Is it at National Treasury? Is it provinces? Is it departments? Mr. Brown indicated that if in one province you have this plethora of cost centers, that alone leaves space for poor financial management, but also of not being able to spend efficiently and get optimum outcomes out of your expenditure. So the savings, most of the savings actually come as a result of benefiting from the economies of scale, but at the same time assuring that when we spend government money, you know, government is a major procurer of goods and services. But government does not negotiate the price. In the private sector, you go out, if you are a major procurer, you actually determine the price you are going to pay in the market. But in government, you do not determine the price. That is why we are not centralizing, but we are putting systems in place that would be able to extract the benefit that any sensible person that procures goods and services would actually want to benefit from. And I say we also are learning from where we come from in the past. We now have the public service that we have. If you look back at where we were pre-1994,
I don't want to contemplate, and I don't even want to look back at what we would be spending if we had kept the system that we found in place of different systems. So we have made progress, but we have learned lessons from the progress, and the challenges that pertain are precisely the reason why we are looking at transforming and reforming the processes, particularly in procurement. And I would imagine also when we address why we still have the problems we have, with CETA being with us here and the Department of Public Service and Administration, when we talk to the IFMS, we'll be telling the committee and honorable members as to what it is that is being done. And I must assure you, Mr. Marais, that the symptoms are just a manifestation of the root problem. And what we are doing here, even the rollout, you actually were repeating Mr. Brown's presentation, only that I think the interpretation, Mr. Brown is not Zulu speaking. So when he talks rollout, that is implementation. And I can assure you, and the committee is actually in its oversight, will be monitoring the implementation, and that the rollout in a sense is actually the full implementation, because the pilot will have long passed when we come to year 3, 4, and 5. But it is implementation we're talking about, and we are actually talking, dealing with the real problem here, other than treating the symptoms. The symptoms are only the manifestation. Mr. Brown, if you want to deal with the ones that pertain to the supply chain and reserve ones that belong to IFMS, to IFMS, so that we move on to the IFMS.
Thanks, Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, members. I mean, the question of how do we actually use large tenders to be able to transfer that kind of skills. We just need to be careful that you sometimes need to get the balance right between getting the service and putting too much objectives in it. If you take, you want to, let's say you want to put out this, right? But at the same time you want to also teach a few people how to transfer skills in terms of that. You shouldn't decide that your main goal is actually to get to that at the end of the day. So once you put multiple objectives in the procurement system, add to cost put at the end of the day. So how do you get the balance right between transferring the skills and also minimizing cost is important. But in certain large procurement systems, we're looking at how we get use it to be able to build skills, not that we just leaving it out. On automation, certainly, I mean, what automation was you basically do, you will first test it before you actually roll it out. So part of testing is to look at the security, the backup system, and the rest of it. So it's not a question of we'll do it blankly. We have piloted and Michael will talk about it later in a trail of certain things. So we learn and we roll out, basically. It is not the intention of the Treasury to take over large tenders or the Chief Procurement Office. What is key is what roles does the Chief Procurement Office put in place to make sure that these large tenders actually are managed fairly efficiently at the end of the day. If you look at ICT, now that you've mentioned it at the end of the day, we need to do quite a lot of role clarification in the space, if you think about it. You've got your DPSA capability to oversee the government's entire landscape of ICT. But you also need chief information officers in departments, specialists to understand the needs within that at the end of the day. So then you link all of that basically to your entire procurement system, and then you possibly get things right at the end of the day as you move around. But the Treasury will have to build specific capability to be able to ensure that how you budget for it, how you expand on it, etc., is basically in line with the principles of efficiency and cost saving at the end of the day. So that is basically key. The Deputy Minister spoke about the saving stuff and milestones. Year one, we did it June, now, April, May. This will be 7 months of it. So we're already rolling out some of the stuff. And as I've indicated, a lot of the stuff will run parallel. As we learn from the one we transport to the other, as we move along. So although I put it in a 5 to 7 year kind of time horizon, we're going to move as quickly as possible as we can. But, to go into the battlefield, you actually need your own people. So as we're doing that, we're also building our own capability basically to do that, so that we rely less and less on consultants to do things at the end of the day, but we embed the system basically before. So the point that you're making, sir, is we are well alive basically to what the minister spoke, deputy minister spoke of the financial controls, and I mean the issue around human capability is the point that you're making, but the point that I'm also making to say you need a proper environment for SEM to basically function basically properly at the end of the day. But the rest of the other questions Michael will talk to when he gets to it. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, members.
Mindful of the fact that you are going to move to the next aspect. There are issues I needed to raise. I'll just throw them anyway. I don't find an obligation to really respond to them if they tell you. I am aware that some of them do. But I'll just raise some few issues. The first one being that one of the Auditor General findings, normally this committee we utilize some research work, particularly Auditor General Public Service Commission as the instrument that we normally use, to just do if things are happening. And therefore, to me, I'm glad to mention that, but we would need to get the full scale of what are the recommendations so that we really look into are we doing progress in terms of addressing that as part of most of the issues we utilize as this committee for our oversight. The next one, it will be an issue which we once had when there was National Treasury as well, quite an interesting discussion, but it still needs to be pursued. We'll look into how to relocate that issue sometime around. Of the Public Finance Management Act, together with the Public Service Act of the DPSA and National Treasury having the PFMA, which is largely developed in terms of, particular accountability. And with the Public Service Act, which is will be undergoing some amendments in terms of tightening it, know that the National Treasury worked a lot in terms of developing the police. Public Service Act, as much as it was there, but we still need to do quite a lot in terms of tightening so that we sort of bring together that aspect of our tightening the accountability. Some of it would maybe see it merging much more a lot once we talk also of the integrated financial management system. But just to mention that You are talking about the chief procurement process that you are now zooming into, which is one area that you realize it needs to happen in order for you to pay particular focus with accreditation focus process on procurement. What one needs to raise there is that since I talked of the PFMA, the Public Service Act, we would need to also look into tightening the side of the local government. I know you hinted that you do assist, but we have realized in public service and administration as well that the single public service, for instance, is one area that would make us work much better with local government, or let's say the integrated public service, where we can look into the aspect that can make us have a very clear way of working with local government. The issue of the Public Service Commission, which only, in terms of the funding legislation, focuses on national and provincial. They are amending the funding legislation to focus on local government. You know about the Section 100, zooming into administration. You talked about what the work that you're doing in Limpopo, for instance. It's one area that still has to come. We could still be together once that meeting takes place, just to see what were the obstacles, the areas tightening it. That's another aspect. The other issue is on the relations to, once we deal with this, the IDPs of the local government, how do we then bring them on board? I know that because of those laws and so on, there is that you can't immediately dictate, but you could just establish a working relation. How do we tighten that? I'm actually raising that because that's likely where we have problems. And, we've got the issue of SMMEs, what to come to localities, which are not really working well. Part of it, the procurement, which doesn't normally go well, or the issue that was raised by Honorable Williams of a bigger tailoring process. How do you follow it through in terms of the processes that take the monitoring maybe of that? If when we talk of even BEs that we talk about, how is it tied? Do we see capacity being transferred and so on and so on? But also we talk of cooperatives which are not necessarily functioning properly. It goes to the question that Kenny was asking, that if you know that the two stages providers you know, why do you still procure, or if you know that the entities of people who deal with this kind of work, why don't you bring them on board for cleaning and train them, capacity them to be people who can provide service, issues such as those. I'm just throwing them there that we also just realized that there are also those issues, possibly want to move also to the representation that can be captured. But the last issue is the buying, you know, we normally have buying power as government, which I don't really, I doubt if we use it sufficiently. I can make an example of banks. There are banks that we use, you know, as major banks, where we save so much money, but I don't really see us utilizing them. I still believe there is still a lot that we need to deal with the transformation of the banks as other entities and institutions, particularly on the transformation agenda, which I believe we can utilize the buying power. I can make an example again there of the housing aspect, which I think we've lost it somewhere. We got right somewhere, but it got lost, and we do have the buying power as national treasure. I'm sure it's an issue that you're aware of. I won't raise it entirely because it's not part of what we're discussing, but once we talk of procurement, surely you can notice all those issues. If I turn them into a speech, I would have finished tomorrow. I've just summed them up in order for us to just know that there are also those issues, so that I don't really take over the meeting, and I would encourage all of us to really move that same way, but at the same time allow you, if there's something you need to capture, but you're free to then maybe move to the next presentation in any way that you would like to deal with it. Over to yourself.
Okay, Chair, let's agree that some of the issues that you are raising are cross-cutting between the two submissions. But the alignment of legislation, the PFMA and the PSA, I mean, I think even with the current process, we would actually still need to look at legislation, because even the reporting lines and mechanisms will also have to align to the current situation. But I must indicate again, as I said earlier, that the reasons why we are where we are today is because of the lessons we have learned from the challenges we've confronted in the past, and we are addressing them. And, we appreciate your counsel also as the committee in taking on board some of the issues that you raised as part of our transformation process. The findings of the AG and the recommendations, I'd imagine, should also be taken on board, because the lessons I'm talking about also would find expression in those unfavorable audit outcomes when it comes to auditing. And what we are trying to do is to make sure that we are able to carry that before even the AG comes. The AG performs, if we were to use the language, post-mortem, and gives you the results of why the patient died. And what we're trying to do here is to make sure that we have patients that, I mean, we actually want to reduce the number of patients that we have, people are fit, that the departments are fit to be able to give us a public service, a capable public service that will be able to take us forward. We've learned lessons also in the Section 100 interventions, and unfortunately, the deployment of Mr. Brown coming from the intergovernmental fiscal relations, I mean, intergovernmental relations division, gives them the experience that is required, because we need to do this at all levels, at both at national and subnational departments. So we think we are on track, and we will continue reporting to the committee and the parliament in general with regards to progress that we make. But perhaps, Chair, allow us to move on to IFMS so that we can address some of the issues that have arisen out of the questions as well. We brought the Office of the Accountant General, the force behind our reform of the integrated financial management system. Is Michael going to do the? Michael is going to walk us through the presentation on the status of IFMS. I'm sure the presentation has now been read, but again, if the system has to work, it also has to be driven by the requisite skills, and in the absence of skills, and in the absence of that commodity I spoke about earlier, this system will still not work. We've moved from one challenge to the other with regards to the implementation of IFMS. You'll see that it has been long coming, and we think we are now in a position to be able to move forward. We've addressed most of the hurdles that we faced, and we must admit we haven't moved at the speed that we would have loved to, but I imagine it is in the interest of our country to make sure that when we do move, and that is why we've also contracted the services of external bodies that have international experience in this area, to be able to, when we move on the right track than shooting in the dark. But I think we are well poised. With CETA also getting its house in order, with the assistance of the Department of Public Service and Administration, we think we are well poised to be able to do it. It will be technical in some areas, but allow us to present this anyway. You will see that supply chain management forms part of this, as we have just been dealing with, and that is why that we integrate the two. Human resource management forms part of it, and ICT also forms part of our integrated financial management system. Michael?
Thanks, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. Honourable Members, we have tried in the presentation to make it as detailed as possible because we don't always get the opportunity to address you, so we have included a lot of detail in there. If there's too much, check and just stop me and say move forward quicker. I'm going to try and anticipate some of the questions that members might have and try and address that in the presentation as well. Chair, as Deputy Minister has indicated, there is some parts that deal with supply chain sometimes, part of IT and the finance part, etc. When it comes to the HR part, I'm going to skip most of that part because DPSA and ITA can be called by Portfolio Committee when they need them. Because we don't deal with that directly, we want to spend more time in the areas that we control because we don't always have the time to address you. Chair, we're going to start off just by giving the brief background about the RMS project. It's been so long in coming that some of the members might not know all the details. So if you'll allow me, we'll just go through it again. The RMS project is aimed to replace all the legacy systems that we have in government, and those mostly is the CEL and BAS, which deal with the finance and the HR side, or the payroll side rather, and also some of the supply chain systems that we have in the past. Now remember, we never had a consolidated supply chain system for the whole of government. Some departments have been using Logos, some departments have been using other systems, and some departments, believe it or not, there's no system at all in place. So the idea behind IFMS was to replace all of those legacy systems and build it all into one system. The project was approved by Cabinet in September 2005. It was a joint project between National Treasury, DBSA and CETA, where all three parties were working together, and certain of the models have been allocated to certain of the departments, and CETA is helping us with the implementation thereof. CETA is also what we call a pump systems integrator, and they actually had to prove that they had capabilities before Cabinet approved the use of CETA in this regard. There's a couple of phases. Phase one culminated in a submission also in 2005 to obtain the approval, first of all, to continue with ITMS. It was granted to us by Parliament. And it should be highlighted that some of the things that was said at the time, that all financial management, supply chain management and human resources systems should be provided centrally. That means that we should have one system for all of those services. Now, Chair, just to anticipate some of the questions, currently this is for all national and provincial departments. It does not include municipalities. However, we have begun looking at the possibility of those systems and how we can do it for them as well. Bear in mind that the financial systems, just as an example, that we use for national and provincial is different to the ones that we use in municipalities. In national and provincial departments, we work on a modified cash basis, currently moving towards modified accrual basis. But in departments, they are on full graph standards. In municipalities, they are on full graph standards. So it does require some tweaking between the various systems if you want to work together. However, there's parts of it that can be done immediately or sooner than other parts, supply chain being one of them. That's why we're here today, is to talk about supply chain and what we can do about that. Carrot also said that all related independent systems renewal initiatives were put on hold. That basically means that nobody should go and enhance the old legacy systems because we were waiting for the new IFMS system to replace all of the old systems. We didn't want to waste money. There were some independent applications that were used by different provinces and departments like Northwest and Gauteng had their own systems, Limpopo as well. Department of Defense had some of their own systems, etc. So these were put on hold in anticipation of the new IFMS. The new financial management supply chain and payroll systems, we said should be developed and managed by CETA. They were the implementation partners, they still are. And the new HR and procurement management system should be acquired and managed by CETA as commercial off-the-shelf system, COTS system. So you'll see throughout the presentation there's two kind of systems, bespoke, which basically means we develop our own system, we write and develop it ourselves, and then COTS, commercial off-the-shelf systems, which means is a main project system that has been developed by somebody else in the past, and we just piggyback on that. Okay, the next slide basically deals with all the various aspects and how we integrate them. You'll see on HR there's payroll and HRM. Payroll, some debate as to whether it should go under finance or HR, doesn't really matter where it sits. The same, there's some debate on the SCM side. You'll see there's asset management. Again, should that be part of supply chain? Should that be part of finance? Doesn't really matter. As long as it's there, it must be a system that controls it. And that's what we're trying to do. And I'll explain all of those ones quickly to you in a short while, just so that you understand what they're looking at. If we go to the next slide, just quickly the benefits that we anticipated from the IFMS system when we started the project. It got to automate our business processes to ensure greater efficiencies. Obviously, if you have one system, the greater efficiencies will come from that. Was to support the implementation of the PFMA and some of the other acts and legislations, because now in the system we can build in those requirements already. So the system will kick out something that doesn't comply with certain aspects of the law. It will greatly improve the general control environment. Again, and I'll speak to it just now, Kenneth has mentioned already, and Deputy Minister also mentioned last night, that there's certain things that you can do immediately, like access to SOS, for example, where you can see the tax certificate and where there's compliance. The whole development of the IFMS would result in development of ICT skills within the countries. Part of this IFMS project from the start was to raise the skills level of ICT industry in South Africa. The IFMS project also meant to reduce duplication of financial types used by government. Sometimes there was overlapping because if you had an asset system and a separate financial system, for example, some of the information were duplicated. And it was to provide visibility into departments as far as financial human resources and all those areas are concerned, because you could pull certain reports that would give you the information that you needed. See, the next two slides basically deals with where we are in terms of the development and implementation of the various IFMS modules. I'm not going to go through it in detail because I'm going to speak to those individually as we go along. So with your permission, I'm going to skip those two blue slides. You do have the slides, so if there's questions, we can come back to it. If we then go to the next slide, which is headed by saying IFMS brief status per module. First of all, just to give you an update on the payroll side, the payroll is one of the modules under the HR side that we have developed. That's one of the areas where we're lacking at. There was a tender that has gone out. It's been cancelled several times. So we will go out on tender fairly shortly to procure the payroll implementation partner that will assist us in developing and implementing that. Financial management, there, Accenture is the first party that is assisting us through CETA. They have been contracted, and to date the project has progressed approximately 52% compared to the specifications that were given to them to do. Business intelligence, that's the unit that will replace the old Willand Lela, that will provide intelligent information to government. Praxis is the partner that's dealing with that, but there's part of it is to replace the old Willand Lela system, and part of it is to develop new capabilities because we have a new system. And we don't just want information from the various old legacy systems like Basantisel, we want integrated results coming from those. HRM, it's a SAP model that we're using, ICT Works, not on that one. Simone is assisting us on that one. And on supply chain, the supply chain system will enable departments to generate demand forecasts, etc. And that's the things that Kenny has spoken about. I'm going to go into more detail about it just now to speak about that. If we then specifically go to supply chain, and we look at some of these things on the next slide, please. Catalog management, the implementation part of there is PILOC that we're doing. Catalog management, or let's go to that later on. Just to tell you that PILOC is the implementation part. Now, asset management, we have the modules that we developed. There is some problems, and I'll speak to those problems just now when we go to it in detail. Procurement management, a lot of that has been mentioned by Kenneth, and again, but I'll speak to that in detail, and inventory management is the last part of that. And then supply chain management operations as well, if we go to the next slide again. A module was acquired from Oracle, that's ICT Works that's assisting us on that one, and then there's a services procurement module that we're working on. So, Chair, those are basically the areas of IFMS that we're going to deal with. I'll now go into detail so that members can understand where we are and what the problems were that we encountered and how we're going to deal with those things. If I first look at the supply chain management scope, we start with catalog management. Now, just to give you an idea, catalog management consists of classification. Now, that's where you say one pen, black, ballpoint, that kind of catalog that you have a detailed list, because often when suppliers come with these exuberant prices, they say that we misunderstood specs, we didn't understand what you wanted. So if you have a detailed description of exactly what you want, and that is standard then for all departments, then everybody knows exactly what you're going to buy. And then when we attach prices to that, if we say a ballpoint pen should cost you, I've got no idea, but let's say between 1 and 2 rand, for example. If you then get a tender that there's 10 rand per pen, then you know that there's something wrong. So the catalog management will assist with that process. Item and service master, that is where additions of item management data or commodity management data will come in. Now, for example, that was one of the questions that was raised, and Kenneth has also spoken about that. The AG every year comes and he says, you've got so many people in your department, that's government officials and they've been doing business, etc. We aim to put that in your hands beforehand, so you can check beforehand whether somebody has got, whether he's a government official or not, and you can counter that. So by the time AG comes, you can tell him, yes, we know about it, this member or this official has got, he's got permission to do business, or we know about that and we've instituted disciplinary processes. So in that part, you will, for example, have the ID numbers of government officials that you match to the ID number of directors in the company, etc. Asset management, again, we know the problem with asset management, that there's a lot of assets that hasn't been recorded in the past. This will help you manage that so that you can, when you write off an asset, it gets taken off. When you buy a new asset, it gets added on. Procurement management, there we've spoken about, Kenneth has mentioned, for example, the tax certificate. What happens sometimes is when you submit your tender, but your tax certificate is up to date, complete, and right. By the time the thing that gets evaluated, that tax certificate might have expired. Now, you take into account the tax certificate on the date that the tender closes, but still you would like to know if the tax certificate has expired. Why that has happened? Is it merely because the company didn't go and renew it, or is it that there's some kind of tax problems that's outstanding? And this will allow to real-time interface with SARS and get that detail. Inventory management, very important in places like hospitals. You don't want to run out calls. You want to have a minimum reorder level, so you know that if your Panado get down to 100 and you know that you have to issue 100 pills every day to your patients, then you know you must buy maybe 2 weeks in advance, you must order the new pill so that it's on time. And then, so you can see this is what we're trying to achieve with the IFMS system, specifically as far as supply chain is concerned. If we go to the next slide, then we, on the following couple of slides, I'm trying to give you an accurate detail as to where exactly we are currently, so that we can evaluate whether we're making progress or not. On catalog management, the system has been applied, it's been implemented at National Treasury, and currently it is being used, so we are testing it, we're piloting it currently. If it works, obviously, then we'll roll it out to the rest of the country. On item and service master and asset management module, these models were developed, and are being implemented at certain lead sites. Now, on National Treasury, again, we are the guinea pigs for most of these on the financial side. It has been implemented. It is not being utilized due to some organizational changes where we reallocating some of the functions to different divisions, etc. There's also a requirement for electronic data capturing functionality on assets, so we are still working. It hasn't been implemented currently. In some of the other lead-type areas like Limpopo, Provincial Treasury, Department of Roads, Department of Local Government and Housing, and Department of Agriculture, that's all in Limpopo. The model is not currently being used. There's some organizational issues. They have insufficient staff to actually apply this. Also, they have some problems when we designed the asset management unit on vehicles, for example. We said we're going to use the VIN number. That's a legal requirement. On your registration documents, there must be a VIN, the engine number. But in Limpopo, they actually barcoded their vehicles. So every vehicle has got one of those little silver strips that can read the barcode, and they want to use that number. So it does require that we need to change the system a little bit to fit in with the requirements of the specific user. But it's not major problems. It can be overcome fairly easy. Then there's some lead side that's currently being implemented. Department of Defense, for example, we had some problems with Department of Defense, mostly because of security requirements. You'll see as we go along, a number of these areas are being piloted at Department of Defense where we had problems. We couldn't implement it immediately as we want to. Those problems have been resolved. We have discussed those things with the various officials at the Department of Defense, and now we only have to write formal letters to say this is the way we're going to do it, and then we go full steam ahead and implement those things. In the Department of Health, it's also been delayed due to asset data is in a format that's different to the format that we currently use. And we have scheduled a visit there to go to Limpopo and just to clarify all the problems, and then lead side implementation will continue. On the supply chain management operations, it's an Oracle product that we're using. Again, National Treasury is a lead side implementation, and the Department of Defense. The issues with the Department of Defense, as I said, has been cleared. That implementation is going ahead now. As far as transversal contract management is concerned, remember transversal contract management for now will only be at National Treasury. Kenneth will deal with that. And the idea behind it is to have transversal contract that everybody can use, but we will determine the parameters of that contract. Again, it was acquired from Oracle, and it's currently implemented and being used. The service procurement area we haven't done yet, but we are working on it. When we go to procurement key PMM enhancements that we have released up to date, or that we're planning for the next period, we are now looking forward up to October of this year. There's a release to production for usage that was done on 9th of April. That talks to the standard chart of accounts, which is Lindy's area, saying making sure that all the items for financial statements goes to the same accounts, etc. There's integration with the SaaS system so that we can get the information on BAS, the tax certificates and those kind of things. And there's some issues about the bank account holders and those kind of things that we are doing. That has actually been done. It's just been concluded now. There's also a release to production that's planned for 31 May. Since an enhancement that came out with that deals with requirements of the Acts, government general metrics report, and some of those issues, that has already been updated. It has been released. It's currently being tested. There's another one that's a release to production that's planned for 15 June that will include the enhancements such as the workflow to cater for multiple authorizers, so where more than one person is authorized, vacation rules, invoicing and visibility, etc. And then there's one that's essential for 15 October that will deal with the integration of ISMS models with some of the legacy systems, etc. Where we are currently on inventory management, the development, excluding the integration into ISMS modules of upon scope, has been completed. So we are currently testing it. Software integration testing is in process. Production user acceptance testing and lead-side implementation has been planned for. And then the delay in the development experience, primarily due to a lack of resources within CETA. As you know, the turnover of your skilled people, especially in the IT industry, is high. And the problem that we encounter is once we get to a certain stage, we tend to lose the people that have been working on those things. Then just quickly, on the key challenges that we face currently, although we have developed some of these models from IPMS, we found that the organizations are not always ready. And that speaks to things like change management that has to be strengthened so that people understand their new roles, but also it speaks to capacity and infrastructure. And we've experienced that ourselves in our national treasury, so that even though we have developed this model, the hardware and the bandwidth that you need for this additional system that you use has not always been provided for. So there's a need in some organizations to up the infrastructure before IFMA can be fully operational. There's some constraint on capacity to acquire and develop and enhance the system, that speaks about the IT capabilities and the people that we have. There's some documents that haven't been signed. Those are more process-related issues that need to be dealt with, just to make sure that the whole process is correct and everything is done. Sometimes we find in the lead site, implementation sites, that users are not available to conduct the user acceptance testing. You can't implement the system if there's no testing before. Everybody must agree that the system is working the way it's intended to, and therefore we need the availability of users to assist in that. We have sorted it out with the various lead site implementation departments, and they have agreed to provide us with those users to test the system. There are also some delays in identifying ownership of master data and establishing a master data government office. Who does the information actually belong to that is recorded in the IFMA system? And there's no agreement by the SLAF committee on operational costs that certain issues when it comes to maintenance afterwards once the system has been implemented, and we're busy sorting that out. So just quickly, the lessons that we have learned so far. One, I think we have to understand that the IFMS project, and we've done our research, we've spoken to other people in other governments as well as in the private sector that has done something similar. It's clear that we have underestimated the complexity of what a system like this entails. We have many systems that need to integrate into one another. We have looked at it now. We do understand it much better now, and at least we think we are able to move forward from here on forward. There were some restricted time frames, so it's difficult to justify and say the time frames were a bit harsh when the project is already 8 years in doing. But part of it is because our planning was not right, and therefore when we started, we were already behind the timelines that we have set ourselves. There were some governance issues as to how the process should be handled, the documents that might be signed and agreed on, etc. Some of the procurement and contract negotiation with third parties took longer than what we anticipated, because you can understand this is a multi-billion rand project, so you have to make sure that the contract is airtight or watertight, etc. So it took longer than we anticipated. There's not always sufficient capacity in key stakeholders. This doesn't refer necessarily to CETA, but also to the departments where we implement these things, because in some departments it was necessary to double capture certain things. You can appreciate that you can't just switch off the old system, start with the new system without testing, and therefore you have to capture some of the information on the old legacy systems, but at the same time you have to capture it on the new system, and it led to some capacity constraints as well. A mutual understanding between different stakeholders of respective limitations and requirements. We have to understand between one another what we can and what we can't do. And then readiness and change management issues in lead sites needs to be taken into account as well. Chair, if we can go to the last slide, I'm not going to talk to the HR portion, but just to explain to the members what we're doing as far as going forward. continue. Go to the one that says IFMS conclusion and way forward. There we go. So what we have done is, I think we realized that we have not progressed as fast as we should have progressed, and we had to take a look at ourselves, because if it is our fault that we have not progressed as fast as we should have, then we should take responsibility for that. But before you can do that, you have to understand what is all the reasons. So some of the reasons we know, we've learned them along the way. Some of the reasons we just need to check. So we've instituted a number of audits that need to be done, both by the Auditor General that is assisting us. The World Bank has already done an assessment for us to say how should a system like this look and what can you do to improve. And we've also instituted our own audits or evaluations to assist us. For example, one of it is a performance audit. As you know, performance audit looks at value for money. So we're saying if this is the money that we plan to spend, how much value are we getting out of it currently, and when can we get the full value out of that? Also an IT audit, so that we can look at the infrastructure. We've seen now that you cannot just have a new system in isolation. You've got to look at the infrastructure that goes with it as well. So it's pointless developing this fantastic system and then you don't have the infrastructure that will support it. And therefore, we're just making sure that we have all our ducks in a row, and therefore we're doing the various audits currently. We're hoping to get the results of that before the end of October, and then we can report to the members as to what the outcome is. So one of the most important things that we're doing is establishing a project management office whose dedicated task it is to only look after IFMS. The various partners in National Treasury, for example, the development of IFMS has been the responsibility of various officials, but they had other responsibilities as well. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to focus everybody to say, this is your primary responsibility from here on going forward. And therefore, we're establishing a project management office. That project management office will also make sure that we stick to our deadlines and our timelines, et cetera, and they will face up people and make sure that meetings are arranged and those kind of things, all of those things happen. We're going to review and update all user requirements. The reason for that, Chair, is that you can appreciate that this project started 8 years ago, so the users then might have changed, the requirements might have changed, so you cannot just continue to develop what was said at the time. You have to take into account any change that has happened. Those are normally small changes that can quickly be done, but we need to be cognizant of those things. We are evaluating and deciding on the appropriateness of the solutions that has been acquired. It might be that things have changed. We're not saying they did, but we think that because the product is 8 years old, we must reflect and make sure that it's still the right solution going forward. We did determining new and realistic timelines. You can appreciate you as members of Parliament want to know when this project will be finalized and rolled out, and we need to give you an accurate picture of that, and we're busy developing or looking at those timelines, and we'll communicate that to the members as soon as possible. We're also reviewing the concept of lead site testing. We found that some of the lead sites, although the partners volunteered and said, please, we would like to be the first one, can you come and implement with us, they didn't fully understand the implications of that, and they weren't ready. Because in some cases, as I said, there's double capturing, so you need human resources. In other cases, there's infrastructure requirements that have not been up to speed yet. So you have to take that into account as well. But at the same time, we're saying that the IFMS is not going to be ready immediately. So we're also looking at the old legacy systems to get some quick ones out of those. For example, just one of the aspects that Ken has spoken about, the interface with SARS to get the tax certificates, we are developing that capability in IFMS, but IFMS might not be ready immediately. So in the interim, while we're still using BAS, we must make sure that BAS can provide that functionality as well. I've gone through the presentation fairly quickly, so that we have more time to engage. So if there's questions, we will take those.
Honourable members, that was the presentation. Maybe amongst other things, we really appreciate the honesty, you know, because from our side, I can indicate once we started to realize, man, something is not right. You know, but, you know, it's been a little bit wishy-washy in terms of the explanation. So it is, you know, something to give us the true picture is the basis for a discussion, you know, and that us can, you know, we can then realize what is right and what is not. Honourable members, I've seen Honourable Dre, Honourable Mare, Honourable Mohali, Honourable Trimby in that order, wanting to also talk to this very serious matter that is here before us. Honourable Didoit, my apologies. You know there was Honourable Dreyer, and my time got used to Dreyer. So now I don't know why do I have to translate to you. I meant Honourable Didoit. Please proceed.
Yes, I think Dreyer is a woman, and she's better looking, but I'm young, so. I didn't see that change yet. Okay. I'm just worried about the ID numbers and double identities. I don't want to go to the whole argument of Big Brother, but have you considered fingerprints and DNA identification, perhaps, when it gets serious, you know? I'm certain people that want to circumvent the system will find a way to do it. Okay, I mean, I'm already Dreyer and Detoy.
So it's just a you won't forget this day, Jefferson. Yes. But the DNA and the fingerprints will sort it out. Okay, the other thing is hacking. The system is very integrated and complex and all that, and we've just now seen on the news that the United States are accusing China of even hacking their defense systems and copying, you know, the highest secrets. So hacking is a problem. That's what needs to be addressed. And then I do see here that on the HR scope, human resources management, it's quite profound if you look at all the slides 19 and so forth. I'm just wondering, you know, we're looking at saving money primarily on the supply chain side. I do understand the connection, and I do understand how the integrated system must make space for this. But you look here at things like recruitment management, termination of services, employee movement, career management, performance management. I do understand it. I'm just wondering if this is going to be done on the central level, like we said, a single integrated public service. I'm just wondering, because the rubber is hitting the tarmac at a very low level all over the country. So it's something that could be very complex if it's going to be management from the very top, central position down at the futsal level. I see a problem there. We have to be clear on how it's going to be done. The other thing that comes up is, if we refer to the first page, on the first page on the background, there's three bullets and the second stripe, a dash. It says departments must be, they're all relative independent systems, and new initiatives at national and provincial departments must be suspended. Now, I was just thinking how far these are down the line, what will be the effect be, you know, on this, and how this is going to be done. Because I'm just looking at the oversight role, according to the constitution and everything. We're on the national level of oversight. There's a provincial level of oversight, and there's a local government level of oversight. Quite frankly, I think on the local level, oversight's not being done properly, because a lot of local government representatives are not so well trained, maybe, or they don't have the time because they are part-time and so forth. So there's a problem there, an oversight, but we're talking about three levels of oversight. So now, if in this system, what's going to happen then? Because your central system of procurement may suggest an outcome or make a choice, which is now being called into question, let's say on the local government level. Okay? So it may be because the local government level is not on the same level of thought. In fact, let's put it that way, at that moment in time. Or it could be that they have a real problem with the outcome of it. See? So maybe, I'm just suggesting, maybe on this new system that we're looking at, corruption did slip into the system. And somebody at local level picked it up, or provincial level for that matter, but somebody picks it up. Now there's a dispute. It becomes a political play ball. It's a political dispute from oversight. It could be any party in charge, or it could be the same party as the national ruling party. But there's now a dispute. How do we solve this problem? Because now councils will sit, and provincial councils, but let's talk about local level, because that's now a proliferation of 1,000 municipalities or more. Now, your permutations are picking up, because now these guys are sitting there,
and they are taking council decisions and they say we have a difference with you on this. Okay, is that right? Because they have, under the constitution, they have oversight that role. Okay, so this is my question. Do we look at all of these and how are we going to solve this? Okay, we've got 5 years, I suppose. But it's a problem. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Murray.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Brown, and the Deputy Minister also for your answers. But I think the latest, or you know, this presentation has confirmed, as you may be rightfully said, you know, a lot of the concerns that I've mentioned, and all that I can say is you've got an enormous challenge on your hands, which is not going to be an easy task. A couple of things that I've just picked up from this presentation is that, you know, the first one, where you mentioned about vehicles, and I know in my days that I studied, there was a course on transport economics. I haven't picked up anything anywhere where there's a system of going to be, where you're going to manage this assets, or is part of the asset management system. Because certainly there must be a fleet management system. So because this is probably one of your biggest products that you buy as vehicles, and obviously the control over that vehicle, those vehicles. My humble opinion would be, in terms of Limpopo, they should not dictate to you that they don't want to use the VIN system and they want to use a barcoded system. I mean, we know what happens with the barcodes that's on this table. I mean, it falls off and it's gone. Then there's no way of controlling that. But the VIN number is only the one engine and nothing else, and you can't take that away. So I mean, my humble opinion would be, I mean, that would be wrong to suddenly now go and change a huge system to accommodate one very, very doubtful promise. The other thing that I've picked up here is, and I've asked myself, what is the readiness of the organizations, as you refer to, of you know, starting with the implementation? Because in terms of your timeline, Mr. Brown, you said it's basically next year that this must be rolled out to provinces. Now currently you've only mentioned Limpopo, where you're basically pilot sites and yourself. I'm just wondering, you know, how ready are the provinces to be able to implement this? Because you can go back and you can, everything, you must have the capable and skilled people to do this. And that may be what relates back to my question about HODs and why. Because, I mean, if you don't have the proper skilled people, then how on earth will you be able to get results? So maybe you can tell me as well, you know, the state of the readiness of the different provinces, first of all. Secondly, you know, how crucial is the skills and capabilities, and what is the proposals of how to make sure that you acquire the correct skills there. Then the other thing that I've missed out here is that whilst I've mentioned it, I didn't pick up anything that relates to the process before awarding tenders. Mr. Brown has mentioned that, you know, the problem is after the tenders has been awarded. The process before tenders are awarded, and that has been rolled out. Because surely that must be in the integrated finance management system. Because that is the root of many of the problems, is the process of awarding the tenders to the wrong people. Then the other thing that I'm also missing here is consequences of not complying. So in other words, what if they don't comply? This is just nothing happens. If there are not consequences, I mean, how can you expect people to suddenly say, you know, I'll step up? Because if there are no risks involved, I mean, why would they comply? I've missed that, and I think eventually, you know, if there are not consequences for people, then you will more than likely not succeed in your objectives. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mohali. Thank you, Chair.
My questions would be around the issue of the time that it is going to take to implement this system. Like rightfully you've said, we came up with this system in order to replace systems that were no longer working for us. So if it's going to take time, it means we'll have problems until that time. And the other issue is, even though you haven't said anything on human resource, I thought IFMS would assist in terms of record management, because we do have, even though it's not human resource, but everything to do with records. You'll have this, the auditor general will come and say, we can't give you an opinion because we didn't have enough documents to work with. I thought that IFMS would help us in that regard, the issues of record management. But then if it's going to take time, we are going to have problems. The other issue is the issue of training of supply chain officials. You say you're going to train them, but I don't hear any way you talk about the, well, how are you going to assess the impact to say, yes, we've trained, because even now they are being trained as supply chain officers. They've been training all along, and it seems as if there's no improvement, and even now you're still talking about training. When will we see something that say, talks to, now we're going to see, we check whether there's impact because we're training these people. And this other one is just an addition to what the chairperson has said on the issues of IDPs of municipalities and their budget. Because other municipalities, I don't know if it's problems of capacity, they'll come up with the IDP and the budget. And the, by the time that they reach the end of the financial year, it's only when you see the advert of the, their project, their big project. And meaning what, in that financial year, they haven't been able to do what they said they were going to do. Because it comes at the end of their financial year. Maybe April, around April, May, is the end of the financial year. You see the advert, we want this and this and this and this. How is this supply chain office going to assist municipalities in that regard? Because they've got all these plans in place. Like I was talking about the issue of time, that is where CETA comes in then. To say, you see, ICT changes, like every year you see changes. This IFMS system, if you're going to have it, aren't we going to move slow? Because when we'll be here, we'll be trying to implement that, then something new will come that we have to filter in the system, and which might take time again to use that new system that will be in place. So I think that is where CETA comes in, which is that we have to tell us what will be they be doing to be on guard, on par, to be able to assist the system that will be having at that time. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Tembi, followed by Honorable Shehu.
Thank you, Chair. I wish I was number one, because a lot of members, they take my questions here. But thank you, Chair. Chair, the two presentations here, I find that they are talking one to each other. First of all, the question about monitoring, I welcome that. The problem that we had, or the problem that they have, is monitoring. And also talking about standardization, which is good. Talking about corruption, fighting corruption, clean up corruption, which is good also. But to me, and talking about capacitating the officials, which is also good. But to me, corruption that happened, or the corruption what is happening now, I don't see is that it's about corruption, it's about the lack of capacity. this lack of capacity, Chair. And it's difficult to capacitate or to empower people. Because here, Chair, I can see a pastor on the police station and police on the pitch. I think what they need here, first of all, is what Mr. Honorable Murray is saying. I think we need a realignment here. Why I'm saying so, Chair, for instance, in other municipalities, provinces, you'll find that there is an office of a CFO, and this CFO is surrounded by deputies and officials. But at the end, you find that they outsource their duties to PMGs and others instead of doing what they're supposed to do. Which means, in that office, those people are there. They don't know what to do. It's just a mixture of rock particles and living organisms. Which, those people, it's not that a person are not qualified, but they are in the wrong offices. If we can realign those people, and then therefore skills, quality, then it goes with the realignment. If we can, then from there you can now capacitate those people. To capacitate somebody who's not in a wrong place at a wrong time, I don't think it will work. And there's a lot that the department have to do. I support them. I like this presentation, but there's a need of changing things there, Chairperson. There are people who are sitting in the wrong positions there. Then once they put the people in their own positions, then they can be able to capacitate those people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bishop. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to talk about the training, even if Honorable Mahai has talked about it. But he talked about the SCM managers. I'm going to talk about the CFOs, especially in the municipalities, where the CFOs, they send them to the training, maybe for about a year or 2 years. And then when the contract of that person expired, they just let him leave with the capabilities of that work. And then they took a new person who is also going to need to be trained in the expense of the municipal finances. So what can we do so the contract doesn't end after the term? And then the other thing is the monitoring of the lack of monitoring of the projects. I've seen most of the projects, sometimes they didn't finish them and then they pay the person who was doing the projects. But without going and monitor and check if this project is finished. So most of the things I'm talking about is from the municipalities because I talk from the experience. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Mabushefo. Yeah, I think also, just entering what Honorable Mabushefo was saying, that we did talk and enter issues of the municipality, and I'm sure there's an advantage of having a member who's also sitting in COPTA. You know, because for us, there is that requirement and that need, and therefore we want to have a discussion to see if what kind of feeling can we talk, especially the issue she's raising of the CFOs. I think, you know, it's an issue that is skill that we sort of capacitate to have, and, you know, in terms of attention, it's something else. Okay, Memoha, you wanted to add something on what you said?
My addition will be still on training. To say, because we're having this new system that is coming in place, are we having DPSA, are we preparing our public servants to to come and be able to use the system, the new system that will be in place. Because we don't want to say by the time that, okay, we are saying system is ready, but we don't have personnel that will be using that system, who will be ready at the time. Because now you're still having people using bus and whatever, whatever. And when you say, okay, we are ready, you don't have people who are like, okay, we are ready, we can do that. Thanks.
Yeah, Honorable Top, you also want to add?
Just one short question. I see also a problem that a lot of procurement are very municipal specific. Let's just go down to the level again, problem where we're far away from the system in 1,000 municipalities, rural areas where a lot of these procurements are very municipal specific. And it's for specific procurement in that area that is not duplicated in a lot of the others, maybe one here, one there, similar but not. It can't be duplicated. So you're going to be engulfed by all these procurement matters that really could have been delegated to the municipal level. That is the one question. The other thing is, I just want to be sure that this personnel human resources management component of this, if that is going to replace the current recruitment levels on municipal and provincial levels. Because if it does, another argument comes into the whole matter. Thank you.
Okay. I will just offer us maybe just a break of 10 minutes to come back, because there's so much that we need to clear in terms of that. But before that, maybe let me just indicate that I won't have much to ask, because I'm aware now what is the actual problem. I've just captured quite clearly. But it's important for me to also emphasize the issue of the synergy, you know, between CETA. There's also CPSI and DBSA there, you know, which does a lot of this work, and also National Treasury driving the programs. There's one major issue which I think it has to, I need clarity on that one. I understand the issue of the transversal contract management and the responsibility that National Treasury indicates they do have, and I have noted on slide 11 where even at the bottom of it, note only National Treasury will utilize transversal contract management. As one matter, and therefore it comes again that it's Oracle that was actually procured, and that's where you actually encountered all those obstacles and the learning lessons over a period of years, which actually shows how much if something goes wrong in the public service, what kind of an impact it creates. So I must say it's not a small problem, this one is a major problem. And therefore, based on the issue that I'm raising of National Treasury utilizing transversal contract, you know, we deal with DPSA in the State Information Technology Agency, and there's an act as well in CETA, the CETA Act, where they talked about procurement of the IT system and the binding aspect in terms of the public administration, you know, thereof. I would need to be clear there. What does the two mean? Only National Treasury and also the Act that is there. And, you know, those who know the text that we emphasize synergy. Every time there's a discussion, especially if they are various departments involved, would look at the synergy aspect, and it's very easy for us to realize that possibly there might be a disjuncture, or we don't really understand quite clear what does it mean, and I would need to be clear particularly on that one. Yeah. Then we can take a break, come back and respond to the question. We'll come back at 11 o'clock, at 12 o'clock sharp.